Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone. Today is the 24th of September, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings, where we'll talk about the important news and topics of the day with multiple voices from different angles, but all from a Christian perspective. And we'll try to do so this morning with honesty, with a genuine faith, and with the real hope that can only come because that tomb is empty, and we serve the living King of the only kingdom that knows no end. That's Jesus Christ. Hope as you're grabbing your coffee, heading off to work, getting the kids up and ready for school or whatever is in front of you, that this real hope of the kingdom can be part of the way that you start your day. So I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by my friend Logan Rausch, running the sound and keeping everything flowing smoothly this morning, along with Paul Perot in the newsroom, who does this job that I think you know if you listen regularly. He just does a great job bringing the news of the day and the guests of the day into our show to just help us sort through all of these troubling headlines. And of course, we appreciate you joining the program as well, along with the three of us, and would certainly welcome a call or a text at any point in the morning. You can do so at 877-933-2484. That is 877-93-FAITH. We really do love hearing from you. Excited for the first hour of the show here this morning. Brandon Showalter, my friend of the Christian Post, which is one of the largest online aggregators and original content of news around our country from a Christian perspective, will be joining us to talk about so much of the news of the day. And we'll hit on the troubling and seems like increasingly troubling developments out of Washington, D.C. and the Judge Kavanaugh proceedings. But we'll also talk about some of the hopeful headlines around our world, specifically some that are coming out of Charlotte, North Carolina, where Brandon reported about 70 churches coming together recently to cross racial and theological lines and to focus on the gospel, not necessarily papering over their differences, but realizing that there is a focus that in which they can share that really matters at the end of the day. Bring some hope there amidst all of the rancor in our world. And then after the bottom of our hour break, Adam Carrington, you know him of Hillsdale College. He's a professor of political science. And we'll take a much deeper dive into the Judge Kavanaugh situation. And I'll ask Adam, if he walked into his classroom today, given the headlines of the weekend, what would he be telling his students? So that'll be exciting time with Adam to help us sort through so many of those realities. But before getting to Brandon Showalter and the Christian Post, I thought we would start with a quote this morning from the great theologian Charles Spurgeon, who, if you're like me and can wake up feeling a bit anxious in the day, he writes this about anxiety this many years ago. He says, "Anxiety does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow, but only empties today of its strength." Said, "Anxiety does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow, but only empties today of its strength." And it calls to mind that beautiful invitation of Jesus when he says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." My friend Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 9 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined in the line by Brandon Showalter, a regular conversation and news dialogue partner here on Faith Radio Mornings. Good morning, Brandon.
Good morning, Peter. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing great. I'd be curious to know how, when you wake up in the morning like this and you face with all of these headlines and what's going on with American politics, do you have any sort of brief thoughts? What's your initial reaction to all this stuff?
Well, particularly regarding the whole Judge Kavanaugh ordeal, I was just last night when the latest developments broke, I was just like, good grief, American politics is, a vat of hog manure is better than American politics right now. It's just so skeezy. I'm sorry, that's just, I just had a little bit of a moment. But, you know, you just got to continue to keep going and just keep reporting and keep your head and just continue. I mean, these are some wild, wild times we're living in.
Oh, man. I loved your tweet that you sent out along those lines.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, really, yeah, that might be one for our Faith Radio Mornings Facebook page. I mean, but Brandon, I don't know. I think so many of us feel that way in terms of we just wake up and just sort of shake our heads and say, I don't even know how to process this stuff anymore, right?
Well, it really has gotten to be quite, I mean, I feel as though there have been so many things. For your listeners, in case they haven't heard, there was apparently last night a woman who in college said that she remembered that Judge Kavanaugh, this is when they were like first year in college, exposed himself at a party where they were both drunk, and her memory is foggy and there was drinking, but I personally, I'm not sure I find this story believable. I know when I was on with you last week, I said, you know, we need to really just dismiss this and we need to consider this allegation of abuse. I am now of the view, and this is just speaking for me, I'm not speaking for the Christian Post here, that there might be some real sinister plots going on here, because I just find this to be not credible. I could be wrong, and I will eat my words if I am wrong. But this is some pretty gnarly, gnarly stuff that I just wonder if there's not maybe something more sinister at work here.
Yeah, it is. It is really tricky to sort through because, again, and you and I have chatted about this too, that there are very mm-hmm. serious conversations to be had about the way women have been treated historically in our country
right.
that are
oh,
coming
absolutely.
To light. And yet, at the same time, it's also entirely possible to use that sort of momentum and trend and conversation and politicize it and weaponize it. And it does feel like maybe some of that is happening right now.
It's definitely possible. We have to be able to. I was speaking with a friend of mine who is a very discerning individual. I mean, she walks with the Lord in such an incredible way. And she said, it's so important that believers in Jesus Christ, when you consider what's going on in our government and what is at stake, that you go before the Lord and pray and ask for his wisdom to know what's really going on in the spirit realm, that we need to discern the source of what's going on and pray that above all else, the truth and that righteousness prevails. That's our responsibility as Christians, to contend for what's good and to pray for God's will to happen and for his ways to be known. And that evil will be exposed wherever it lies, in whatever party, in whatever issue, that righteousness would prevail. So. Yeah. I agree with that completely.
Yeah, I think that, and boy, that really is the invitation for the church these days, is to live a different way of life along the lines you described, and be praying and discerning and walking together with this. And so with that, you wrote a really compelling story for the Christian Post that I sorted through, and it was about 70 churches in Charlotte, North Carolina, coming together and going across, not papering over perhaps denominational or racial lines and recognizing they exist, but they got together to really focus on what mattered and shine a different kind of light. And boy, that could be something so hopeful for today.
It was an encouraging story. I think just to fill your listeners in here, it was got in touch with a pastor based in Charlotte who started a church 8 years ago in his living room along with his wife, who they merged with another church that is about 50 years old, again, in the Charlotte area. And with a buddy of his, they were just thinking, you know, we ought to do a sermon series at some point where we perhaps swap pulpits and wouldn't it be great to just focus on what does unite the body of Christ instead of what divides, and just as an expression of unity and solidarity, you know, do a sermon series together. And before they knew it, a lot of other people really liked the idea, and that they pitched this to a couple of their friends, and a local network of pastors took it from there. And before you knew it, you had 70 churches in Charlotte preaching a month's worth of messages about what they're for and not what they're against. Mm. Now, it's important that I think we as believers in Jesus do stand for what's right, and there are times where it is definitely appropriate to speak about what we are against, but it is much more of a powerful witness, I think, to the community to know what you're for. And I tell you, I swim in this sea of what's going on in the world of ministry and in church, and I tell you what, I am very, very, very tired of seeing so many divisions over things that really don't matter in the grand scheme of things. Leaders fighting over their particular pet doctrines and isms, and the hour is such that we have got to be unified. We have got to focus on and insist on focusing on the essence of the gospel, Christ crucified and resurrected, his power to transform, the wholeness that he brings when we live in relationship with him, and the journey of knowing him together. And let all of these beautiful expressions, the rest of the things that are wonderful, the Wesleyans, you know, it just Baptist, all of the denominational lines that, you know, really don't exist in heaven, but I think God uses in his own beautiful way here on earth.
That's Brandon Showalter.
Refuse to fight about those things.
Yeah, Brandon, no, I know. I think you're saying it so beautifully and well in the invitation. I know that in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, there's some 450 to 500 denominations in just in one city like that. And so to start healing some of those divides, I mean, does it come down to so much whether we're going to decide if we're going to pursue power and maybe vocation and all of that? It's certainly in Washington, D.C., it seems to be all about who has power. And the church really is called to live a different way.
The church really is called to live a different way. I think the temptation for power and influence is a real stronghold. I mean, I think you've touched on something very important there. What I often see is that people like to be right, and that can be a particularly deceptive temptation because as believers, we want to value the truth. You know, Jesus said, the truth will set you free. You shall know the truth. The truth shall set you free. What I often see is a lot of leaders who just insist on being so pristine and precise, and they'll just fight to have their own most perfect take on it be triumphant. And it's really, I don't know. I find it to be as grievous. This is just my perspective now, to be as grievous in some ways as those who are, you know, preaching things that are false. I mean, there are warnings throughout the New Testament, certainly old and new, but especially in the New, in the Gospels, about false teachers, false teaching, false prophets, and there are so many warnings that we as believers need to be aware of that and be watchful about that. But I'll tell you, I think it's important, especially now when our culture is as divided as it is, for people to put aside differences and focus on what we do agree on and insist on not fighting about the things where we do disagree. We don't have time to be in conflict about these other things. I think the gospel is so important that we just refuse to engage in unnecessary testy conflict about these things. I mean, yes, go to the mat for what matters and contend for the faith where it counts. But I thought this sermon series in Charlotte was just a wonderful thing, and I hope it's replicated in other cities around this country.
Yeah, it sure be nice to get some momentum along those lines, Brandon. For listeners just tuning in right now, that's Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post. And I just highly recommend going to the Christian Post as you're trying to sort through the news from more of a Christian perspective as opposed to all of the maybe some sort of sensationalism that happens. And Brandon, when we come back from break, we'll get into some further conversations just around some things happening in the UK. I know gender dysphoria and gender confusion is really a big conversation in today's news. And so we'll go and see about this rise in the UK around gender dysphoria that I think is consistent with what we see in the United States as well. So we'll sort through that together next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined by Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post, who joins me regularly to just help sort through so many of these difficult headlines and does such a great job for the Christian Post. Wonderful website for news, too, where you can go as listeners, just check things out from a Christian perspective. And Brandon, I know there is one of the news topics that we could get into today that has to do with the idea of peer contagion, which I think is something that has always been present among middle schoolers and high schoolers. You sort of gather everybody together and how one person thinks and acts impacts begins to have this sort of contagious effect. And now we're seeing that with so many questions around gender dysphoria. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but the numbers were that there was about a 4,000% rise in gender dysphoria in the United Kingdom.
That is correct. An over 4,000% increase in the UK in less than a decade.
Wow.
That is right. I talk about, of all the issues that I report on, this one is the one that keeps me up at night. This is a truly disturbing phenomenon going on in the earth, particularly in the West. I don't know what the figures are here in the United States, but I would assume that it's pretty similar. Social contagion, as you indicated, this issue, particularly because social media and Tumblr and other media influences is really taking off within the youth, and it really doesn't help also that in many school systems, gender ideology is what is being taught, and children are being brainwashed with lies. I mean, just here in the D.C. area where I live, one of the counties in Virginia that borders D.C., they just approved a curriculum teaching people that biological sex is assigned at birth. That's a total lie. Here, I mean, it's your sex is known when fertilization happens at conception. That's when the sperm and the egg meet, and that's when the chromosome, whether it's XX or XY, that's when it occurs. But the modern gender ideology teaches something completely else, something completely different, and it's a lie. And now young children. I mean, I was just this weekend here in D.C. I was at a conference where I ended up meeting one of the leading pediatricians who speaks out against the transitioning of children and minors. We've got institutionalized child abuse going on right now in this country because children are being taught to believe that they were born in the wrong body. Never mind that it is actually physically impossible to change your biological sex. There is now a cottage industry that is growing around puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgical procedures being mass-marketed through various media and educational materials to confuse children about it. It's one of the most horrific scandals that are going on, and I just hope and pray that your listeners will continue to stay informed about it, because this is the banality of evil being played out on the bodies of children. And yes, in the UK, in less than a decade, referrals for gender dysphoria for children who want to transition has grown over 4,000%. I know of no condition, physical or psychological, where it has increased that much in that short span of time. This is some truly diabolical evil being promulgated from people with interests that are not good.
Well, and Brandon, I think to your point as well, as I know, and having the privilege of teaching a sexuality course for the past decade or so, it really wasn't until about 2 years ago that we started having conversations about gender dysphoria. The previous 8 years in front of that, it really hadn't come up in class. It didn't mean it wasn't present to some degree in our culture, but now it really is all of what the students want to talk about. So I don't know if it's 4,000% in our country. All I know is within the microcosm of my classroom, the students are reporting that those are the conversations that are being had. And I just was chatting with some young people yesterday, and they said when it started developing the conversation at sixth grade in their school, they began to wonder and started thinking certain things about themselves. So we have about a minute left here, Brandon. I'd be curious, how do we as believers, obviously we pray, what else can we do in this situation that can be so difficult?
Get informed and be watchful. If you're in your community and your local school board, find out what they're teaching, because it's not just in major, very liberal cities. This agenda is sweeping. It's everywhere. And tell your children the truth, because they are being bombarded daily with messages trying to lie to them. And even in my own profession, I saw an article saying that a woman committed a crime. Well, it was a man who says that he identifies as a woman. Even newsrooms, journalists are capitulating to the language demands that this ideology demands, and it's a lie. So parents, don't stop telling your children the truth, and speak out when you see this stuff happening. Share articles on social media. Don't be silent about it. I can't underscore enough how evil this is.
Well, it does, and I know when you think about the fracturing of the stewards, male and female, that were meant to guard the garden, right? I mean, and there's just a quote that I know of, and we can stay on for an extra minute here, too, just in terms of a woman who studied throughout history, and she said that when you see the gender lines blur throughout history, it usually means that it's a civilization that no longer believes in itself. And I thought that was a really interesting and quite haunting quote.
It is a haunting quote, and it just the implications for all of this. I'll tell you what, I mean, a few weeks ago, I had dinner with a group of radical feminists and a lesbian journalist and a gay guy who read my coverage in the Christian Post because they are terrified of how the media has given into these are women who disagree with me on a lot of things. They are not Christians, but they're reading my journalism because they see the truth of what's going on. This ideology is also, I'll just say, the feminists care about it because it is extraordinarily damaging to women and girls. I believe misogyny is at the core of this. You really do see, you know, this sort of the pressure for females to transition to males. I mean, this is impossible to do. You can't change your biological sex. It cannot be done. But you really see that women are targeted most of the time. There is an inordinate amount of pressure on them to conform. And a lot of these feminists rightly point out that this ideology is just trying to make them adhere to the same sexist stereotypes they have long fought against. So they're not happy with this at all. And so I think there's also, what else can your listeners do? Reach out to people, because there are a lot of people on both sides of the aisle that are hesitating about this. And so tell the truth, tell the truth, tell the truth.
No, Brandon, I can't tell you how much I'm just grateful for your voice in this, for the Christian Post, for what you do in the work. This is conversations hopefully we can get into even more in the weeks ahead. Really appreciate your work and your perspective.
Well, I appreciate you, Dr. Kapster. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we'll take a break here for Lighten Up and bottom of the hour news. And when we come back for the second half of our first hour, Adam Carrington will join us, a professor of politics at Hillsdale College, and we'll talk more deeply about the Judge Kavanaugh situation. So more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. So appreciate Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post, who can really talk about any of the news items of the day from a Christian perspective. He's so dialed into the entire world of journalism. And so bringing him on the program, hopefully for you as listeners from a broad perspective, can speak to these issues. And again, when I hear about all these topics, it just reminds me of the quote, if you're just tuning in, that we started our day with from the great theologian Charles Spurgeon, who said, "Anxiety does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow, but it only empties today of its strength." I hope we can find some strength and peace for today and worry about tomorrow. Last Friday on Faith Radio Mornings, I was joined by Adam Holtz, regular contributor, who talks about different dimensions of movies and theater and just what's going on in popular culture. And we were talking about the Bert and Ernie situation, in which people were wondering if they were gay or not. And Adam was talking about just reading too much into scripts.
When we do Bible study, we talk about the word exegesis, which is mining out the meaning of the text and what's there. And the opposite of exegesis is a funny word called eisegesis. Eisegesis is where we take our ideas and we read them into the text. I think in our culture, there's a lot of eisegesis going on. If you're coming from that perspective, you see two close, intimate, in a good way, not a physical way, male friends. And because of your perspective, you think, well, how can that not be a sexual thing? I mean, people even do this with Jesus. You know, they say, well, Jesus and the disciples were clearly, you know, having those sorts of relationships too. And no, that's not what Scripture says. That's eisegesis.
If you want to catch that entire segment with Adam, you can go to myfaithradio.com. He just did such a great job of talking through so many of the ways in which we think about how news is portrayed and how movies are portrayed. And I just so appreciate him as a conversation partner on Fridays. So myfaithradio.com. Well, I see that Adam Carrington, a professor of political science from Hillsdale College, is already on the line. And when we come back from break, Adam and I will talk about what it might look like to walk into class when your lesson plan goes awry because the news events dictate otherwise, and that's exactly what happened last night with the Judge Kavanaugh situation.
America's in serious trouble today. The indicators don't lie. This is Jim Garlow. For starters, moral boundaries and sexual limits have disappeared. The Bible describes it as, in those days, everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Murder abounds today, whether it's killing babies in the womb or killing innocent bystanders, even in church. We spend more than ever on education, and yet 19% of high school graduates are functionally illiterate. The federal debt is in the trillions, and we're now a borrowing nation big time. There's a collective callousness toward God and the Bible, putting us in a highly precarious moment in our history. And that's primarily because the church in America has become largely impotent and irrelevant. Proverbs 27:23 warns, "Be sure you know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds." There's more at jimgarlow.com.
It's about 20 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and really glad to be joined on the line this morning of all mornings by Dr. Adam Carrington, professor of political science at Hillsdale College. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
Well, I'm doing just peachy, Adam, given the events of last night. I know when I was going to sleep, I thought I'll take one last look at the news and make sure that everything is covered for the morning for our conversations. And, of course, news is breaking late about multiple allegations of Judge Kavanaugh. And I don't know how to sort this out, Adam. I mean, you're the professor of political science. So what would you do if you were walking into a classroom right away this morning and you were faced with all the questions of your students?
That's a great question, and I think that what you would need to do now is take a step back and maybe ask some of the big questions beyond the details. One, try to have an idea that you know the details. What's actually being accused? Who's accusing it? How much do we know about them? And I think, you know, some of those are still unanswered. But then what you'd need to do is step back and ask the bigger questions and just work. And in that case, I think it's good to say to students, I haven't worked through this myself, and let's maybe do it together, which I think shows a good, maybe some intellectual humility that you need to have in all this. But the bigger questions being, what does this change and what stays the same given these kinds of allegations? And I think that all of those questions are really throwing this into a tumult, because it gets into the even bigger issue of in this era of the Me Too movement, where we're trying to, and I think rightly trying to, give deference and protection and show compassion toward those who may have been sexually assaulted and you know, the difficulty of coming out with that. Also saying that accusation can't be condemnation, and that we need to say that there are times there are false or misleading accusations, and we need to ask, not just in the courtroom, but in the courtroom of public opinion, what kind of standards are we going to apply to these so that we can respect the potential victim and the potential perpetrator. And that's, given the partisan climate, especially difficult. So I think that's the broader context I would want to set in trying to get to some of the bigger, some of the grittier and maybe unsavory details.
Yeah, it sure is tricky. And when I look at both sides of it, Adam, and I see the president is tweeting out some things late last week around the fact that if this has actually happened to Blasey Ford, the first accuser, that certainly she would have said something to her parents. But that's, of course, not consistent with people who have been victims of such difficult sexual abuse situations, because they don't tend to come out in public. And then on the other side, you see the Democrats, who seem to maybe even be politicizing and weaponizing what is such a difficult conversation by withholding information and bringing out sort of at the last hour. So neither side of this seems to really have their hands clean in the process.
Yeah, we're not all bathing ourselves in glory at this. And I think you're right that I think it's wrong to assume that a 15-year-old who was probably at a party she didn't tell her parents about, if this all happened,
right,
is going to run home and say something about it, because there's almost a double level of shame. Why were you there? Plus, what happened? You know, often victims of sexual assault feel shame when they don't, when they absolutely should not. But you're right. On the other side, you know, some of these accusations were known for a while and were rolled out for most
maximum political effect. And I think that's part of the difficulty here is you don't have the time you need to try to corroborate these claims. You know, the first claim, there's been a lot of difficulty corroborating with other people to say they were at whatever this party was, with contemporaneous evidence of other people recalling this party. You know, many people that have been named have been have come out and said, "I know nothing about this." One person that was named even said, "I don't even know who didn't even know Brett Kavanaugh." So, you know, I'm not saying that it's a sure thing that these are wrong claims, but one, I would say so far they haven't been corroborated or given as much credibility as a number of other accusations against conservatives or liberals in this Me Too era. But at the same time, you know, I think that there's a lot of room left. That there's just not enough time. And I think that rolling this out at this moment in the process really shows a lot of bad faith, even though I think even in bad faith we have to take these accusations with some seriousness.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, and really we're up against the deadline of these midterms. I know it's coming up. This might be a different situation if we were having these hearings in March and April and we were 6-7 months away. But it sort of feels like that if we can just delay it by a day or a week, according to the Democratic side of it, that we can get past the midterms and then maybe some things would shift according to who's the nominee.
Right, right. And what happens in the senatorial elections, because will the Democrats take over the Senate? You know, I still think that's less likely. It's possible, but I'd put it at maybe 1 in 4 chance. And then they could dictate who would be the nominee, or they might just sit on the nomination the way Mitch McConnell did during the 2016 election. It would be a much longer span of time, but I wouldn't put it past the Democrats at this point. And that's where, you know, why humans do things really comes into focus here. I think there are people who are very much want to protect Brett Kavanaugh's reputation, where they believe that he is a good and decent man, and there's lots of evidence to say that in other parts of his life. There are people who really want to protect victims of sexual assault. But you also see that there's a lot of selfish partisanship going on here too, which really convolutes it. And I think that's where, on one hand, what this changes is you now have the allegation of a pattern of behavior. But I think what you don't have is, I don't think we have enough corroboration. I don't think we have enough people publicly saying, yes, this happened, and I heard about it, or I saw it as well, beyond the accuser. And again, I think we have to give utmost respect to those who have been accused of having something done to them along these lines. But at the same time, we need to say we need to protect those who have been accused to the degree that there has to be at least some decent evidence to support an accusation.
And what are the next steps in this process, Adam? I mean, if they do continue to move forward with him as a nominee, he has to be approved by the Judiciary Committee and then by the entire Senate. And how long does that kind of process take?
Well, it doesn't normally. Given that the hearings, the planned hearings are over, that process could all happen in 1 week, and maybe even a couple of days. The committee would merely need to meet, vote, and then the Senate would have a day, maybe maximum 2, of debate, and then vote on it as well. So that process, in sort of abstractly, doesn't take very long, because the hearings are done and the investigation is supposed to be done. With these allegations, who knows? I think it's all up in the air, and I think it really depends upon what some of these Republican senators, Corker, Flake, and Murkowski and Collins, what they want the process to look like. Really, they're the ones I think are going to be the ones dictating to what degree do we stop and look at more of these accusations, to what degree we don't. And I think a lot of it's going to be riding on, for the first accuser, how her testimony goes on Thursday, now that she's agreed to testify. And for the other accusers, how many people can they find to publicly come forward and say, we heard about this, or we were there, we saw this, we knew this was the case? Because the less independent corroboration you get for 30-plus-year claims, the harder it's going to be to, you know, get to firmly say that this should be an accusation that you train wreck a nomination for. So it's a mess, and I think the next 24 to 48 hours are really crucial as far as which way it was tipping. I thought it was tipping more in Kavanaugh's favor until the second accusation came out, actually.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch in this week ahead. That's Adam Carrington, who's professor of political science at Hillsdale College, joins us regularly here on Faith Radio Mornings. Does such a great job of walking us through the complicated politics of the day. Adam, when we come back from break, I'd love to get your take on some conversations that have been going on around free speech and the suppression of it on college campuses around our country. So more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. About 8 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined by Dr. Adam Carrington, professor of political science at Hillsdale College. And Adam, I know there's an article that we were kicking around this weekend a little bit about the suppression of free speech on college campuses. And I know that last Friday I had a gentleman, he's a professor at NYU, Jonathan Haidt, who released a book titled The Coddling of the American Mind. And are we running into some situations, Adam, where increasingly so on university campuses, that free speech is being suppressed in favor of you must think this way, you should think this way? I know Education Secretary Betsy DeVos came out this weekend and was suggesting that.
Yes, I think that is the case in many places. And I at least want to distinguish that free speech issues are only constitutional free speech if the school is a public university, because that means they're acting as the state, as the government. But I think that the principle of free speech against the government can't make you say what you don't believe or suppress you from saying what you do believe, is a good cultural principle as well, that there should be fairly wide, even private, among private schools and others, some allowance for free speech as well. And I think you're right. And something that DeVos pointed out that I think is really important is not just supporting the good that it does for someone to speak their own mind, but the good it does for you to hear someone else speak their mind. That there is the need for you to better form your opinion, for you to have a better understanding of what's true and just. You need to be exposed to contrary arguments. You need to wrestle with them. You need to try to figure out what you think in relation to them, and it often drives you to even work harder on that. That's something I certainly try to push in my own classroom. So in short to say, I think that her comments about the damage it does to not have some free, open, and civil debate is, I think, well taken and is a problem on a number of campuses across the country.
Well, and Jonathan Haidt was making the point, too, and to your point, Adam, now this morning, is that it isn't being protected from ideas that relieves the anxiety about them. It really is working through them and processing them together. And so to be exposed to a range of ideas is what ultimately allows us to be free from some of the anxiety about ideas maybe we don't like.
Yeah, and you know, a thing I like to tell my students is I really don't care what opinion or conclusion you come to as a teacher. I mean, I care as a citizen, as a fellow human being, but I want you to feel free to come to the conclusion that you think is best so long as you're able to support it, as long as you're able to corroborate it, as long as you do it by respectfully engaging with the text. And I tell people, I said, if you come to the opinion that I think's right or you know, the opinion obviously that you think is right, you'll come to. By being exposed to the other side, your opinion one will be deeper. It'll be firmer. It won't fall away as quickly as an opinion that hasn't been exposed to anything but straw men. And on the other hand, I think you'll have more respect for your fellow citizens, even though you disagree with them. You may actually see the humanity in or the point in the other side's argument, even if you don't come to it. And I think the deeper claim there is, isn't that what education should be about? Aren't we training young men and women to be human beings and citizens beyond just people that hold jobs? And don't we need good human beings and citizens? And if this kind of exposure is crucial to it, then I think universities are being very deficient in their contribution to the young minds, their contribution to the public good, by denying this kind of free and open debate that I think is so necessary.
Adam, we have just about a minute left, a little bit less, but this is something even parents and grandparents can practice with their kids, right? Where maybe say, this is the truth that we believe about the kingdom, or and then we talk about politics, but say, but other people believe this, and here's why. It doesn't mean it's what we believe, but it is a way in which we can help our kids navigate some of this stuff.
Yeah, and I think especially with Christianity as well, I think you're right to point to that, to say you shouldn't be afraid to expose your kids, and we definitely will expose ours to other faiths, to non-faith, to atheism, and to say, you know, we believe these truths, and this is why. We don't agree with that, but I think it actually will make their faith stronger in the end if you do it in a strong but, I think, compassionate way.
Adam, thanks for joining us this morning and just talking through these issues. I certainly wish I was in your classroom today. So if I can get to Michigan in time, I'm going to bail out of the Twin Cities and get there and listen to what you have to say.
If you know how to travel that quickly, let me know, because I would like to copycat it myself.
I love it. Have a great day, Adam.
You as well. Thank you.
We'll take a break and wrap up the first hour of our show here on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, given the events of the weekend, this is one of those mornings coming into studio here on a Monday morning. I couldn't be more grateful to have Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post, as well as Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. They're part of our programming regularly and do such a beautiful job of walking through these issues from a balanced and Christian perspective. Top of the hour next hour, we'll be joined by Nicole J. Phillips, who's been in journalism a long time herself, and we'll be talking about kindness and the importance of kindness in all of these kinds of conversations.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.